Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Corey Kid Smith, and you are listening to the True Warrior Football Podcast. And with this week, we have come up on the two-year anniversary of the passing of Dijon Anderson. And for those that do not know about Dijon, Dijon was a phenomenal individual. You can say just calling him a gifted football player, it would just be selling him short of what he truly was, which was a phenomenal person, a phenomenal son, a phenomenal brother, and generally a person that was loved by just about everybody that he came across. And his life was taken short, and it was just something that was, it affected so many people, players in the program, students in the high school, people outside the program. It affected everybody. And on today's episode, I'm going to be having individuals that I've already had interviews with over the course of doing this show. And we're going to talk about how Dijon had a great impact in their life. And with that, you know, I just want to really dedicate this episode to him. But before I can do that, you know, it comes across to me that some people may not know who Dijon was. And I remember his funeral was jam-packed with people that loved him and people that did not know him but still want to come and pay their respects. And like I've said on the show before, I did not have a great bond with him like so many others do, or so many others did, I should say. And just sitting in the crowd and watching so many people show love to him and really praise his memory and really, you know, celebrate the life that he led, that he had at such a young age. He was just 18 years old when he passed away. And I was so touched and moved by the sermon that Pastor Duncan gave and everything else. And it was just, it was a real touching moment, really. And I wanted to come on here today and I wanted to read his obituary. And if you just give me a moment here, let me fix myself to actually do this here. Excuse me. It starts. Dijon Lamar Anderson, son of Corey Anderson and Krista Frazier, was born November 10th, 1998 in Indianapolis, Indiana. He attended Heather Hills Elementary School, Stony Brook Middle School, and received his high school diploma from Warren Central High School. Dijon expressed his athletic ability in football, receiving numerous awards, including IFCAA, All-State honors, MIC All-Conference honors, All-County honors in his junior year, and All-State honors as well again, as well as MIC All-Conference honors and All-County honors his senior year, as well as being the team captain and voted the most valuable defensive player in the MIC conference for his senior year. He was also a player for the Indy Select 707, where he often traveled and played games. Dijon received a full ride football scholarship from Southern Illinois University, where he planned to study sports administration. Currently, he was employed as a part-time sales associate with Home Depot. Dijon accepted Christ at a very young age and was baptized at Eastern Star Church in 2006. He later united with New Beginnings Fellowship Church under the leadership of James Anthony Jackson, Sr., where he participated with the drill team and occasionally volunteered in the nursery. In 2015, Dijon became a member of the City of Hope Community Church under the leadership of Pastor Corey A. Duncan, Sr. Dijon was a very charismatic individual. He loved to joke and laugh and was always the life of the party. Dijon never met a stranger. He was a great friend, teammate, brother, and classmate. Dijon's smile and laugh were infectious and lit up a room. If you were having a bad day, he would always find a way to cheer you up. Dijon was very driven, goal-oriented, and determined to be the best. He always went after what he wanted in life, whether it was during Friday night games or in the classroom. Dijon's loyalty grew into a movement, and Dijon Strong impacts the community not only locally, but nationwide. Dijon went home to be with the Lord on Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017, at the age of 18 years old, 6 months and 14 days. He was preceded in death by his grandfather, Daryl Coach, and great-grandfathers Robert Frazier and Samuel Bridges. He leaves to cherish his memory his mother, Krista Frazier, father, Corey Lamar Anderson, brothers Jalen Frazier and Monet Anderson. He also leaves his grandmothers, June L. Frazier, Teresa C. Campbell, as well as grandfathers Danny Campbell and Curtis Frazier, as well as a host of aunts and uncles and cousins, as well as other relatives and friends. And with that, folks, that right there is just part of, you know, the obituary tells a story, or it gives basically a brief description of a person's life. But today's episode, I'm going to give you guys a much opportunity to get to know who he was, and hopefully you'll come out knowing how great of an individual this person was. So thank you and enjoy the episode. Oh, the last thing I want to talk to you about, you generally always write about RIP D3. You talk about it on Twitter. You talk about a lot of stuff. And for those that do not know, D3 is for Deshaun Anderson, who was tragically lost his life almost 2 years ago now. What was your relationship like with him? And like, how have you just really gone out there to really honor him and with your game and from since his passing?
I mean, he was like a big brother to me. Coming up as a freshman, that was defensive back that I went against, and that's kind of like what people, like all the upperclassmen was like, oh, he's good because I made a catch on him one time. And then, you know, ever since that catch, you know, we became good friends. And then, you know, playing with him my sophomore year, that team was pretty good, so we had a pretty good bond too. And then I really don't look up to too many people that's my age, but that was just somebody that I looked up to, you know, the type of swagger that he had on and off the field.
He definitely had a lot of swagger.
The way he played with he just had no fear in his heart when he played on the football field. It was always 100 miles per hour.
Absolutely. He definitely played with no fear. I mean, he was one of those guys. I talk about the old Warren legends, the old greats from my time a lot. And he was definitely like a lot of those guys that played hard and played great football. And I truly wish the circumstances around everything with him hadn't been the way it is, because I generally know he would have made something of himself. I
have put an arm around his brother and helped his brother out a lot. His brother's a little bit of a knucklehead at times and wants to, like, be – he wants to do his own thing, but I was like, man, I'm trying to guide you, man. I'm trying to guide you. So I try to do that in it for my part with to honor him and everything like that, because I didn't know Dijon nearly as well as a lot of other people around here. Just from seeing him in the hallways, working in school, I didn't know him that well, but, like, so many people loved him. And so many people still love him. Like, I was talking to Max Smith the other day, and Max was like, yeah, man, that was like my brother, man. I miss him so much to this day. I got him on my screensaver on my phone. And I know, like, so many teachers in the building, Miss Burchett, who is close to, with you still, thinks about him so much every day as well. Like, he was really a great player, man. A really great player. Him and Michael Tutsi in that backfield, not backfield, but at that safety position together, they were a problem back there for offenses. They were a problem. I'm sure they were a problem for you at practice a lot of times too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't just those two either. You know, we had Julius Brents and also Terrell Anderson. That, you know, out of the 4 years, that's probably the best defensive backcourt that I played or practiced against.
I would agree. This year's group of guys, they gelled really late.
Yeah, at the end, that's when they started clicking. But that's really where it all mattered. You know, when the playoffs came, they got it together.
We definitely did. We definitely did, man. Let's talk about this.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, I wasn't exactly sure if I should talk to you about it, because I know he was definitely he's such a bright spot for you personally, and I wish I would have known him on that level as much as you have. But could you talk to me about how special of a guy and player Dijon was on and off the field, really? Because I talk about his accolades on the field a lot, and David Bell said, you know, when he came on as a freshman, Dijon really pushed him and was one of the guys that really made him as tough of a player and as great of a player that he would end up being. And I definitely see that, and remembering his senior year and what all those guys went through and did and how that season ended. But I don't think a lot of people know about Dijon outside of football.
Dijon is a special soul. He is a character. I always said J. Coe came into my door and said, "Hey, Miss Burchett," and his little voice said, "I want you to meet Dijon." And it was the end of Dijon's sophomore year. And I said, okay. And so I met him. And then the coaches were like, this is one we need to work on getting eligible and work with. And Dijon, I mean, he is goofy. He is funny.
Mm-hmm.
When I say his smile could light up a room, he did. He always, himself and Mac always did these little dances. There's so many videos of them just dancing together. And that's Dijon. He would come around the hallway and you could already hear him, "Hi, everybody." I mean, he just had that great spirit about him. He was just a great soul. And he was really easy to connect to. And at that same time, he bought in to our coaching and what we wanted him to do. And he was one of those that, thankfully, you know, Coach Spann and Coach Griffin at Southern Illinois and Coach Hill, they took a chance on him. And he was able to earn his full eligibility to go play at Southern Illinois. Unfortunately, tragically, that got cut short. But Dijon, I mean, he just was one of those kids that really just – it's hard to explain that spirit, that energy you felt when he was around. And David, there's some people that remind me of him a little bit when it comes to their, like, tenacity and toughness. Mm-hmm. I think David, you can tell he got that from him. But that goofiness and that always lighthearted spirit was just unmatched.
Well, I know you have a great relationship with his mother, and I'm developing a great relationship with his brother, the silly self boy as he is. So I definitely see the silliness from Dijon within his brother. But the whole situation is as tragic as it is. But I'm glad his mother has been able to turn that negative into such a positive thing. And doing what she's doing and just making sure that his legacy and memory has lived on.
She's fabulous. She's one of the toughest people and strongest people I've ever known throughout the whole situation of everything happening. She was always tough and positive, and she's been able to help other kids. She's created a college tour. She's created Dijon Anderson Foundation. She's helped to bring awareness that, you know, not everybody's your friend that you think is your friend. and make smart decisions and just be careful who you surround yourself with. And I mean, she stands up there and speaks at our Take a Stand Day and gives that message to our kids, and she's just wonderful. And that just shows her strength, and you can tell why Dejan and Jalen are such wonderful young men, because they have a woman like that that's raising them.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Coach Tutsi has said it multiple times before, tough times don't break people. It makes people even tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And she's definitely a great individual. I love speaking with her whenever I can, and I definitely know that she's going to continue to carry that legacy for as long as she possibly can. Ladies and gentlemen, with this week being the anniversary, the two-year anniversary of the tragic passing of Dejan Anderson, legendary Warren Central football player, I wanted to get a lot of people that had history with him and share thoughts about his life and legacy and how he's been missed and what he was actually like. And with me today, I have our head coach, Coach Jason West, with us today. Coach West, thank you for coming on to the show and speaking with me about Dejan and what he was like in the player as a player in your program.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a good time to talk about your players.
Absolutely.
And you know, all their accomplishments and how far they came. So well, let's have a good time.
Yeah. Now, tell me the... And I, in the years that have passed since his passing, I've come to recognize, like, he has had a bigger impact in his passing than I feel like he had when he was around. Do you kind of feel that way as well sometimes?
Yes, unfortunately, I think that's how life works. You know, most awards are after you're gone. If your lifetime achievement is usually. When it comes late, I think that's something we are getting better at acknowledging people as they are in mm-hmm. the present. But you're definitely right. He had an impact not only while I was here, but he still has an impact, which obviously makes him a very unique individual and someone's very special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just, you hate to see a person be recognized in that way. Because it feels like he was unappreciated at times while he was around us. But when I talk to people, when I have interviews with people and they bring up like what it was like to be around him, they always have such glowing things to say about him.
And, Oh yeah.
And it makes me wish I had a more, positive relationship or just a bigger relationship with him during my time here in the school working. And I just really hate that the moments that everybody else has in memories about him, I don't have those as well. What kind of memories do you like to share with people about what it was like coaching him and being around him on a daily basis?
You know, Dejan was different in how he carried himself, how he interacted. He was a kid that had a glow.
Mm-hmm.
He attracted people.
Yes. You know,
there's attractors and detractors. He was definitely an attractor and had a great smile, great looking kid, you know. Mm-hmm. So he had all the intangibles, and then how he just carried himself. He might walk into a room and do a backflip off a wall to just, you know, come in, and his laugh was just different. He had a laugh that made you laugh. You know, then he was just always dancing, or he couldn't hold still. You know, he's standing there talking to you. He was bouncing around, couldn't hold still. He just had unlimited energy.
Definitely.
And I think that's what people, you know, liked the most about him. And he had a way to make everybody feel good, you know, kind of like that grandfather gene when you somehow you got 32 grandkids and they make you feel special.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of how it was.
With him.
There was 200 kids in a room and he kind of made you feel, you know, different. He absorbed, he clung to you a little bit. So, I mean, it's hard to explain just because, you know, it's life. Life gets in the way of relationships and interactions, and there's a lot going on for everybody. Like you said, it's tough to sit down and really build relationships in these models that we live in today. So just, you know, from my standpoint, just the guy that I got to spend, you know, some really quality years with him and, you know, become, you know, not only coach, but a friend at the end. Cause after football, that's when really those seniors realize you're their friend. You mm-hmm. know, you can't really be during the journey. You got to be a coach, and it's hard. And then after it's over, they realize that, hey, that those guys were there for me the whole way. And many seniors start to get it.
Yeah.
Some down the road, but man, he started to get it, and he got it, and he was really appreciative and really, you know, awesome in that respect.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that as well. I know a lot of times people only think of Dijon as being an absolutely great football player, but he was more than that. He was a great teammate, a great friend to so many people, and definitely his impact and was felt when it left, when he was no longer with us. And and I think people really over the years have really felt like, okay, we need to be more positive and do things the right way for Dijon, because I think that's what he would have wanted. I truly do.
Yeah. I mean, Dijon never wanted ill will on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a competitive and a fierce, you know, kid in that arena. But, you know, in life, he you can't find anybody that didn't like him. You know, it's just hard to do. And that's a very rare quality in a person, because he could go sit at any table in a lunchroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was what I call a floater. I always tell him, try to be a floater. Those are the guys that are most successful in the business model, because they can sit at any table in a lunchroom and feel comfortable. Doesn't matter, you know, what color, height, weight, socioeconomic, you know, clique, sport. He could go literally sit at any table and everybody would start cutting up and start laughing. So he had a unique gift in that arena.
You always want to see players have those type of great qualities, be able to bring others in around them and make everything feel like everything's going to be all right. And from my understanding, I know I spoke with David about this and a couple other players, Brandon Warren being one of them as well. He would always reach out to him and like, hey, you know, regardless of that mistake you make, you know, everything's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just like he was a player that you would want other players to model themselves after. From my understanding.
Absolutely, relationship-wise. I was really hard on Dijon. I was probably harder on him because he always had more to give. You can always push those players that have more in a tank. You know, you can only ride a car until it's out of gas, you know. But with Dijon, you could keep pushing him, you know. And his junior year, he just lined up and played football. He lined up next to the safety on one play against Center Grove. Didn't he know? He's so intense on the game, he didn't realize he's next to the free safety, and he's strong safety. So, you know, so we challenged him to know defense and sets, because Center Grove gets in, they only run five plays, but they get in 50 formations. And,
yes.
And, you know, he really took on challenges like that. We challenged him in his weight room his junior year, and he ended up power cleaning, you know, over, you know, I think 265. He was a powerful, explosive kid, but still didn't push it to the limits until we really just kept pushing him. And we never had to pull him. You know, when you have to pull athletes, it wears you out and it's not fun. But he was an athlete you could push, and you could push, and he never backed down. He's not built for backing down. He was just different in that arena. And that's refreshing as a coach, that you know you can keep pushing him and keep pushing him, and he keeps stepping up and answering the bell. And it's not that he's successful at everything. You know, he embraced that. You know, weight room, you fail. If you do it right, you fail every day in there. That's the best thing about the weight room. No one wins.
Correct.
You know, and he understood that our schedule and who we played, that you're going to fail out there sometimes. You know, when you're guarding Rush East, you're going to take some L's. But that, he had the ability to erase it. You know, if you made a mistake, he was fine the next play. Some kids go into a tunnel. Yeah, funk. That it's hard. Maybe next week before you get them out. He's like that shooter you want on the court. You know, he's going to keep shooting.
He's going to forget about it and keep going to the next one.
And if you got after him, he forgot about it. Next day, he came in, smacked my door. Hey, J-Dub, love you. You know, and he'd run down the hallway, and I wouldn't even see him. I'd just hear him laughing and giggling, and he was different.
Did his senior season, did that surprise you, or was that something that you were expecting to come from him?
No, he was special. I remember his freshman year, he was my tire flipper, because he had so much energy. Like, he couldn't sit still. He couldn't sit still in class. He couldn't sit still in a football meeting.
Mm.
Even in practice, when you're trying to go over game plan, he's over da-da-da-da-da-da doing Dijon, you know, just having, he's having a good time. And you're, Dijon, focus over here, you know. And we had those big tires out there. You know, we always told him, you're going to have another good year this year. And he'd always laugh, because he never knew what I was talking about. And it was always about flipping those tires that were Goodyear tires. And but his freshman year, the last game of the year, is against Carmel. And he absolutely dominates this game. We win the game.
Mm-hmm.
We should have. But Dijon was that special. He played offense, played defense. He took over a freshman game. So we knew what he was early. And then by his junior year, he really started to expand. But he had older guys that kind of guided him, McKelty, and kind of took care of him and got him through it. And then his senior year, he realized that he's the senior. It's his team. You know, it's that senior's team. It's not my team. It's their team. And once he took ownership over it and realized what he was and what he could be, he was really, really fun to watch on a daily basis. He actually had to set the tone. And what a tone to set. You know, that's the one you want. You know, he had the juice.
Yes.
You know? And that was great to have every day. Even on Tuesday, John's out there. He just wanted to play football. He didn't care if it was a game. He loved games just like all the competitive players do. But he even loved practice. He loved to get out there and just play football, which, you know, as a coach is a really nice thing to see, feel, because I mean, we all don't feel good on Tuesday and Wednesday, as you know. Those practices are bangers, and it's hot. And
it's usually the hardest part of the week are practices. When you get to game day, game day is easy.
Yeah, it's miserable. You have to make it miserable so you're not miserable on Friday. And he was never miserable. He was always just kind of – you couldn't break him. He was cool.
That is very great to hear. Coach West, I appreciate you speaking with me about Dijon and his legacy and his memories that you have of him in the program. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. He's wonderful, and he's still with us. So anything absolutely. Whatever he can do, let me know.
Yep, always. Thank you, Coach West.
The play against South Dakota State, but you were also, like I said, you had two interceptions earlier in the season, and one thing that was interesting with you, and I looked on the stats, you were the only player on the defense that didn't start in any game this year but had two interceptions. Run me through those plays and tell me, do the last one last, of course, because there's a special backstory I want you to tell with that one. Tell me about the first one that you guys had. I think that was against Western Illinois, was it?
Western Illinois, yep.
Okay, tell me about that play. Walk me through it here.
So, I mean, they put me in. We were up, I think we were up 28-7, and they put me in. It was the beginning of the fourth quarter. Coach Clarence, always, DB coach, always made the call and wanted to put me in or not, and he threw me in and said, Robbie was actually hurt, actually, so I had to go in anyway.
Okay.
But, yeah, so he threw me in, first play of the game, first defensive snap that I had. I got the pick. I saw the quarterback.
That was the first play of the game for you?
For me. First defensive snap of the game for me. And I saw, you know, we were bringing some pressure, and so I knew the ball would come out fast. So I was just staying low, and I knew the quarterback was getting pressure. I saw the ball come out, and I just broke and made the play.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You got 1 foot in, right? Or did you get 2 feet in?
I think I got two. I think I got two. Because I'm white lightning. You got to get two.
Oh, my God.
Always.
White lightning. White lightning has been this boy's nickname since he was a little child, man. He's always had wheels, but on his right, – now, tell me about your second interception here.
Let's get in.
I'm going to really get into white lightning here in a moment here. Tell me about this one.
Let's get into the second one. So the second one was versus Southern Illinois.
Okay.
Which a lot of people know that's where Dijon Anderson was committed.
Okay.
My long great friend of mine who passed. Anyway, I was against Southern Illinois. I was in the fourth quarter. They put me in again, similar to Western. The ball got popped up. It definitely got tipped. It got tipped, and I was in the right place at the right time, made the play. And I returned it. I was trying to go to the house, but I got caught by somebody.
I thought you were white lightning. I mean, basically, when I think of white lightning, is when you get the ball in your hands. I mean, you just taking it to the house, aren't you?
I should have been, man.
You should have been. I mean, I think you were a track player, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you were all state qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got wheels. I've seen you score a defensive touchdown. You had a great defensive touchdown. Your father has a picture of your touchdown right here in your house, mm-hmm. right here from your first game as a Warrior, and you had the wheels on that play. So, I mean, come on now, son. You can't let the offensive linemen get their hands on you.
I went right when I should have went left. That's all I can say.
You zig when you should have zagged.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's right. You guys end up getting the win. That was most important. Now, tell me what did you do with that game ball that you had there?
So,
with the ball from that interception, excuse me.
I naturally just held on to the ball. I don't know why. I feel like it was something else that made me just hold on to it. And I kept the ball. I went to the sideline. I hit it. And the first thing I thought about was, I'm going to give this to Dijon's mom for Christmas.
That's awesome.
So I did do that. I signed it, put the date on it, and it was the best. She loved it. Best gift she got
That is absolutely awesome. Now, like I said, folks, Michael spent his first 3 years of high school playing over at Lawrence Central. He was being coached by his father. But then, you know, his senior year, the tough decision to come back home and play for our Warriors. Tell me what that one season, what your one season was like, and how you were able to bond with Dijon and the other guys on the football team there. Tell me what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was the second best decision I ever made. I love coming back to Warren. I knew everybody, but everybody, I was new to the school, so it was kind of a good mixture. But I clicked, everybody, they took me in, and it was like I never missed a beat, and I was able to be a good leader for the team, and I knew, met some new people along the way. And then obviously, I mean, the rest is history. I was able to pick up some offers, thankfully, and met a lot of great people, and we did had a great, my best season of high school. So
now tell me what it was like, because you and Dijon right there, I think when I look back on it, because the great Warren Central teams of the old, you know, they just had really one free safety. If it was of course, Jeremy Finch, number nine, and you wore number nine in high school for us, or Jerry Boyd in 2019. You know, those guys were great free safeties, but then we transitioned and split, and we started doing more double safety, you know, two safeties, a defensive front there. And really, when I think about all the great Warren teams that come through, that have come through Warren Central, I think you guys – you and Dijon were probably the two, it was probably the best two safety defense we've ever had in school history. I mean, Dijon was defensive player of the year in the MIC, and I honestly think we could have done co-MVPs or co-defensive player of the year with yourself, because you had a streak of, I think it was like four or five straight games where you had a turnover, interception, fumble recovery. You were making plays all over the field, and Dijon was as well. So what was it like playing with him that year?
I mean, you just said it. We made each other better because we would always compete to see who could get a pick in this game. We were always trying to outdo each other, but we were doing it in a good way, and we were competing with it, and, you know, so, I mean, he probably – I give a lot of credit to him because he made me up my level of play.
A lot better.
For sure, definitely.
And this was also the first time you had played on a team that your father wasn't a coach of in high school. And Coach Mann, you know, he talks highly of you and Dijon from that season. What do you think of – what was it like playing for Coach Mann that one season?
It was great. Coach Mann, because he brought, like I said, everybody brought me in, allowed me to come in and just feel at home. But he allowed me to come in. We were all about business, all about football. And we were able to combine our football minds together and just, you know, create something really good. And he taught me a lot. I learned a lot. I'm thankful for everything he did for me and Dijon as well. And we were just able to go in there, and it felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it definitely was meant to be, and I really hate that the season ended the way.
Yeah,
I know you guys all dealt with tragic moments. I've talked about him on the show a few times, but did you guys have a little bit of a bond or relationship with Dijon while you guys were all in the program together?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I played with him, like, actually when I was like in the inner city league. That's where I remember from then in high school. I remember
Ipsac.
Huh?
You played IPSAC?
No, I played at TAB CAW.
Oh, TAB, that's right.
And he actually played on the team with Duders.
Yeah.
And that's where I remember him from, the Jaguars, and I played on the Eagles. But when we got in high school, we all grinded with them. So, like, we got close. And I remember my sophomore year, I got in, like, the Center Grove game, first game of the season. And I was playing along with Dijon and Mike Tootsie and all of them. It was just, like, surprising to me. Like, I didn't expect to be doing that, but it was devastating because I had talked to him that day, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I've been doing Dijon forever, like, because, like,
He used to always come on my cousin house, Kyanji Tyler. Like, he used to win.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my cousin. And, like, we always be over there, Dom Tyler. Like, they all stay together, like.
Definitely Dom, definitely those guys did run together.
They used to play on a travel team since grade year. They had one of the best travel teams. I always knew Dijon was going to be special. As a sophomore, he played on kickoff. I seen him make a big hit. I was like, yeah. I think he's going to be ready next year. Then his junior year came, he did his thing. And then senior year, I think he won Defensive Player of the Year.
Mick Defensive Player of the Year. I want to say that was the first time that award was handed out. And really, for offense and defense, we got, because Tante won it for Offensive Player of the Year in the Mick. And Dijon won it for Defensive Player of the Year in the Mick. And this scene... him win that award, I mean, being the first one to do it, because it's just something special being that first one. And this whole tragic incident is just, I really wish I would have known him better, and I really wish I would have been doing the show like I'm doing now back then. That way I could have grown to have known him, because I mean, at the time, I'm just working in the building like I am now, and... you know, he was a knucklehead too. He had his moments, and everybody, you know, he had those moments, and you know, we butted heads a couple times. But at the end, when he became a senior, you know, I noticed he was focused. I noticed he was, you know, he saw it finally. Okay, this is what we got to do, and everything like that. And he became the player that we all knew he could be. And I really do wish things had worked out better for him. That's partial reason why I gravitate to his brother now, and I stay so hard on him now.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely somebody I want to see succeed and become his own man, but also, like, I don't want to see him fall through the cracks.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be on every time I see him, I'll be on him.
Man, you
he
got
should,
to.
He should be. What,
yeah, he should be a starter next year.
You think so?
Yeah, he's very athletic.
And very strong.
Just like his brother.
Really?
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't think he see what he got, though. It's crazy, but he's something special.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and I have another guest coming back to the show to talk about this very special player in Dijon Anderson and what he was. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to True Warrior Football Podcast, Coach Russ Mann. Coach Mann, thank you for coming back.
Hey, I'm just surprised I got the invite back.
No, when you and Coach Spann were on, that was a great interview, great talk. You guys have great chemistry. I loved having you on.
I think you just
on.
Threw a kiss in there. I don't know about that. Wait a minute.
But no, you guys were great. I look forward to having each of you on again. But with this week's show, of course, we're talking about Dijon because it's the 2-year anniversary of his passing. What can you tell me about his play and what he was like off the field as well, and how your bond with him grew?
Dijon, from his freshman year on, I mean, I could tell you stories from each individual year. And when he was a sophomore, sitting directly next to McKelty Williams in film, and
this is when McKelty was a senior, I believe, correct?
And we did just. You know, starting that marriage between those two, you don't have to be like McKelty, but just watch how things are done at a professional level.
Okay.
And immediately after McKelty left school, like when he graduated and moved on to college, I had a talk with Dijon. It was just a brief one. I said, you don't have to be McKelty. I don't want you to be McKelty. I want you to be Dijon. That's why you're special on the field. But you just have to understand the expectation that is, or the, you know, this, how the standard is set here. And McKelty did a great job for that, just showing him how you need to handle football professionally. You can get away with your athleticism. You can get away with your, I have played some type of sport with a ball all my life, and I can beat you at freshman football, middle school football. I can beat you on the playground or a pickup game. But when you get to varsity football, that only takes you so far against most teams. You can still dominate high school football, but at some point, some other teams and concepts start to catch up to you. And if you don't do your homework on teams, they're going to try to exploit your weaknesses. And so you've got to just perfect everything. And that's the way McKelty approached it, and then that's the way that Dijon approached it. But there's a funny story about there was a certain chair that McKelty and I made DeJean sit in during the defensive back film.
Okay.
It was to the right of McKelty, and it was done that way all year, and he could not deviate from the plan at all. I didn't even have to ask DeJean to sit there. McKelty made sure it happened. Like, McKelty would just, DeJean, right here, come on, kid, let's go. And then they'd sit right next to each other. And the very, very first meeting that we had when McKelty had graduated, and this is the first defensive back meeting that basically DeJean is the new leader of the defensive back. And he is not in his chair. And I walked in, and he's got that DeJean smile on his face like, yeah, this is how I'm going to run my meetings. And he was sitting at the teacher's chair in the corner of the classroom, which was right next to the computer.
Okay.
And he was my sidekick to, like, for film. Like, hey, can you rewind it? Can you go back to this clip? Can you do this?
Gotcha.
The previous year, that was Wilmer Cole.
Okay.
And he ran everything. But DeJean was just like, and he had one leg up on the chair or one leg up on the table, just smiling at me like, yeah, this is where I'm going to camp out the next few years. And but he took his film serious. I mean, he realized that was where our secondary, that's the difference between some of the other secondaries that just think that they can just show up and just do practice. He put in that film work, and I mean, that's where there were decisions made where I was just in the room, but he was talking with Mike or Julius or whatever defensive back, like, hey, how do we want to play this? How do we want to do this? And I would just shut up and let it go. And they would look at me if they need my help, like, all right, you guys good? Is that how you want to play it? DeJean would just like smile at me, yep, that's it. All right, let's move on.
Was there ever a time when you were coaching him where you weren't so sure about him being able to handle things properly because of the pressure that we were putting on him? Because, of course, you know, you say you wanted him to be his own man, not have to be McKelty. Mm-hmm. But did you ever feel like that was a little too much for him as well?
What? There's only one time I would pull him. And the time that I would pull him, it was actually him and Jayco would get talking in practices. And there were, I mean, it was just to try to,
when they were going at each other and stuff like that. Okay.
And it was all in good, like, competitive spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I mean, they would shake up at the end of it. But if you did, and you were able to get underneath DeJean's skin, and there was something like a look that he would get in his eye that would basically, what I said is that your level of play dropped. When you get that look in your eye, you have become a worse football player. When you don't have, for DeJean, I needed him to have a smile on his face and that little bounce in his step, and I was good. I did not need to watch DeJean anymore.
Gotcha.
We're good. But when he wanted to take something personally on somebody else on that other team, and he got that, he could back himself up. And when he wanted a one-on-one take on that other person on that other team, then we became a worse football team. I just had to pull him aside and just ask him, like, yo, hey, get a smile on your face. Chill out. It's not about you versus him. Don't get yours.
Take it down a notch.
Yeah, just you worry about how we're going to help us win a football game. And the only other time that he put a little pressure on himself was, and it's still to this day, I haven't changed it since I put it as my Twitter profile picture, was a talk that him and I had down at the University of Cincinnati where he was very upset at himself for missing a tackle. It wasn't what led to the touchdown. It was just in the drive that – it wasn't the play that scored a touchdown.
Okay.
But it was a previous play in the drive where he had missed a tackle on the quarterback who was very good. He pulled the ball. He was very elusive, very difficult guy to tackle. And he – and DeJean, I don't even know if it remember him being juked or if it were just not the right angle, whatever it was, but I knew it pissed him or it upset himself up. He had become upset about the play. And during the extra point, he had unbuckled his chin strap and did not make any effort to go and block the extra point and or be ready if there were a fake.
Gotcha.
And that's why that talk happened. And if you notice in that talk, I actually had my headphones off so nobody could actually hear what I was actually saying to him. And I actually told him, I said, everybody thinks I'm talking calm to you right now. But it was just a talk to him about he never knows who's watching him right now. Because there's a game that was played before us, mm-hmm, between Carmel and LaSalle, and then we were playing us and Coleraine. I said, there are 8 safeties or more playing on this field. And then going into the day, I had you at number 1. And so did every other college scout in this stadium. Some of them just dropped you to 3 and 4 because of that pouting right there. They don't even want to deal with that. And I just said, you just let me know now if this is how it's going to be the next 2 years. Because I just let me know if I'm – you. And he never pouted ever again. Never. He knew He told, I mean, we just, and if he had a suggestion for me, the same thing. If there was something that he wanted in practice, I listened to him. And that's the way I coach anyways. If there's something that the players want, for example, I got a text message from a group of players last night. They wanted to watch Center Grove film. Mind you, they text me on May 21st.
Gotcha.
It's 90-some days away from game one.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning at 6 o'clock, they're right coming in the door watching Center Grove film. They want it. And so that's the same thing. And we have that mutual respect for each other. And I had asked him that, no, that's not how you're going to portray yourself. You're going to market yourself as, oh, well, you missed the tackle. You're going to win this series. You're going to win the next play. You're going to win something else besides that particular play.
That's what you call great coaching right there. It's partially.
Well, I don't know, man.
No. It is coach. It is. You know, I think you a lot of times coaches don't like to pat themselves on the back. That's the reason why I say myself, you are a fantastic coach. You build great bonds with your players, and obviously the bond you had with the current players and past players, and Dijon is definitely a special one for you. In the years that have gone now since his passing, how have you been able to deal with it? Because obviously you guys were very close. Because a lot of times, you know, even with me being an ex-coach, you get so close to a player, when you see something happen to him, it hurts you a lot harder than others would be hurt by a certain thing. Like, there was a player I dealt with during my time here, state champion. I love him to death. He did something so heinous and hideous, I can't stand to think of what his actions were, but I still had love for him, and I hated what he did. But with Dijon, I know it hurt so many people because everybody loved him. Everybody had so many bright, glowing things to say about him. Did it take you some time to get over or get past him not being around anymore?
I think it took the community, the football team, the coaches, his former teammates, his family, most importantly, and many of us aren't over it. You know, like, it just is something that still stings to this day. I'm not sure if you do. I mean, you do recover. You at some point do have to take care of yourself and move on as a human being, but there is never a time. I mean, there's a picture about 2 feet away from us right now of the day that he signed with Southern Illinois, that and he was 24 days away from that graduation and getting to a campus, which was the talk that we had in that profile picture, where I had mentioned to him, it wasn't so much about education, it was more about I was put on this earth to help players get to that goal, to get to a Division I scholarship where they don't have to pay for it, they can go worry about getting an education, their family doesn't have to worry about it. They can go and get a degree and move on and stay in Illinois, go up to move to Chicago, move to Indianapolis, get that degree. But to come back to that question of getting over it, that was a tough summer. And that was, I mean, there wasn't a practice or play or certain songs that came on or certain periods that you didn't think about it. And I am now to a point where I don't hesitate on bringing his name up in practice to use him as an example of something that he did very, like, bad or well. Like, it mostly well. Like, it, hey, yo, you tell me somebody else that could get off an exterior block better than Dijon Anderson. He would just destroy bubbles because of the way that he could get off blocks. And then kick off, like, a drill that we run, and I mentioned that there was I cannot think of anybody else, and I will flat out say his name. If I have to use McKelty as an example or something, I use McKelty. If I have to use Wilmer Cole in the fact of being able to play defensive back on the other side of the field next to the other team's sideline, because it takes a mature defensive back to be on that side.
Correct.
Because you're going to hear a lot of stuff. And then at the same time to be able to, like, look at signals or whatever it may be to give yourself an advantage on that sideline. And I will use – there's probably 2-3 times a week where I bring up Dijon, just because I would have if he were here anyway. And everyone knows, like, that's where his game was. And that's it. It takes time. It's still something that it weighs on me to this day. And that summer sucked. Just, what ifs and what things that you could have said maybe differently, or ways that you could have maybe intervened. But yeah, you don't put that on your shoulders too much. But, yeah, it's not been something that has just been able to, hey, let's move on. It's still there. It's still something that we think about.
It's definitely not a let's move on moment. It's more of a teaching moment, and what can we do to get better and not make, I think the word mistakes is improper, but as at the moment, that's what comes to my head. If you understand what I'm saying, mm-hmm. like you want to teach the players that you have, you know, what went wrong here, and how can I as your coach and teacher, mentor, somebody that you're around, how can I help you guys not fall into the same pitfalls as others before you?
That's, for sure. I mean, you can give any type of life lesson that you want. I have an obituary in there of another player that the way that he passed away was not wearing a seatbelt. He was a baseball player at North Central, and that hit some black ice and rear-ended a car, and the airbag unfortunately broke his neck. And they weren't doing anything bad. They were actually, it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and they were going to go play basketball at Chittard High School because the North Central and Pike basketball game was sold out, and they were turned away at the door. And they're just like, well, they weren't doing anything bad. There were a group of baseball players that were just going to go to Chittard High School that somebody had a key to, and we were going to go play basketball. Allisonville hit that ice, and he was going to be a three-year starter at shortstop for the varsity baseball team.
That's tragic.
I mean, those are just times where we were all in the same situation, and especially with football coaches and football mentality, basketball mentality. When you train and you work so hard, you start to create this, like, I'm invincible type of mentality. It won't happen to me. That cliche phrase of it won't happen to me. But you do that with that it won't happen to me mentality is you start to feel like you are invincible, that you not necessarily – I don't want to say the cliche thing, like, oh, it won't happen to me, but – there's nothing that will hurt me.
Yeah, I think we've all had those moments where we've all felt like that, and then something happens where it knocks us down, like, oh, wow, this is real. And I think a lot of our kids now, they think a lot of things that look like it's, they're so young to understand what life really is after this point in their lives, and then they get out. They're so anxious to get out of here, and then they get smacked around, not literally, but like, in life, things happen to you, and it changes things. And a lot of times, they aren't prepared for it. And that's what I feel like us as coaches and teachers and staff members, we all have to get them prepared and ready for.
Oh, for indeed. I mean, that's part of your role as being a coach. And it's unfortunate some coaches, when that last game ends their senior year, and I can't think of anyone on our staff, but I've just been around people who almost feel like they they've washed their hands with those players, and mm-hmm. their role is done. Good riddance. Like, no, if you're going to sign up for this gig as a high school football coach, and for me, I necessarily don't have a position group, so I have taken it upon myself to make sure our seniors are getting to the finish line. I've looked and asked our position coaches to, okay, you worry about the next crop. You know, kind of, you know, stay in touch with some of the seniors, make sure that they aren't falling off and, you know, having to do some summer school or whatever it may be. But our role, yes, is to create young men on and off the football field.
Absolutely.
That's why we're put on this earth. And that's why when I was asked from my college counselor, my very first meeting with that human, and he said, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you graduate from Butler? And I looked him, and I was dead serious, square in the eye, and said, I want to be a high school football coach. He laughed at me for about 10 seconds and said, well, you don't go to college for that. And I said, I understand that. And so we ultimately came into being a math teacher so that I could coach high school football, because that's where I just felt not only being a role model, but also being able to coach the X and O's of football. Also, I always felt like being a good locker room guy and showing mm-hmm. them how to. And if you've ever come to a defensive meeting of ours or a defensive back meeting when – I was that position group's coach. I try to create that type of, it's a melting pot of people. You could be white, you could be black, you could be fat, you could be skinny, you could be athletic, you could be unathletic. You can wear a double-digit number, a single-digit number, you could be a three-year starter, a one-year starter, it doesn't matter. We all as a team need to prepare to stop this other team. And so you just create, and when it's on film, that's one of the, when the athletes are most vulnerable, because coaches are making fun of, not making fun of, but coaching and embarrassing the starters, the star players, the three-year starters. Absolutely. You're getting, everyone gets called out. Everyone. So
film don't lie.
If you are, yep, film don't lie. And if you are in that, anybody, any high school football player, college football player, pro football player who has been in film, what stays in film, what happens in film stays in film. You got the little correct. Vegas model, because there are things that are said that could hurt a man's soul a little bit about being soft or whatever, and it, none of it's taken to the hallways. None of, it's all what makes us a better football team. And then at that, at the end of the day, also, if you can have that influence of creating young, positive, human, male figures for our society.
All right. Well, Coach, man, I know you got a busy day. I just want to say thank you. This means a lot to me, and because – you know, I love doing what I do, and I love teaching the history of our program. And I don't think you can really truly tell the history of our program without talking about Dijon and what he meant to so many, and what he has meant to you over the years, and you coaching him all throughout high school. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Well,
for me.
I appreciate
you
having me.
All right, folks, and before we end this episode, I have one more person I want you guys to listen to, and he has been doing great things, truly great things. I just had him on a show 2 weeks ago. Brandon Warren has been truly carrying out such a positive, positive legacy or a positive message for everyone in the city, all the youth in the city to go by in honor of Dijon. And he started We Live, and the interview he and I had 2 weeks ago was so good. I didn't want to cut up parts of it like I've done with a few of the interviews that you've just listened to. So I wanted to air that once again in its full entirety. So this is a long episode, but I did not want to make an episode tributing Dijon. I didn't want to cut any corners. There are so many people around here. Granted, I could have interviewed 50 people that could tell me individually great stories about them, but that would just make the episode too long. But I felt like this interview that we had last 2 weeks ago was so good, it needed to be told in its entirety again today. So with all due, here goes the conversation Brandon and I have for you. Now, moving on, ladies and gentlemen, to my main guest. This is a gentleman that he was a part of the football program all 4 years. And graduated, and after his career here ended, he took a moment that was very tough in his life and made the best of it. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show for the very first time, We Live Indies founder, president, CEO, the head honcho, Brandon Warren. Brandon, welcome to the show for the first time, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. And this, anytime I have guys like you from the program that are doing great things, I want to have you guys come back and speak with me. Let everybody know what you guys are doing. Because a lot of times people, if they aren't following you on social media, they don't know what you're doing. So talk to me about We Live Indy, mm-hmm. and what you are trying to do with that. Really, if you want to start with the beginning of it, we can start there if mm-hmm. you want as well.
Yeah, you know, after May 2017, when we first found out that Dijon was killed, actually was shot first, when we first found out that mm-hmm. he was shot, Angel was killed on scene, and another teammate and friend of ours was gunned down as well. Deep down in my emotions, I told myself, like, that's something that, you know, I could have been a part of preventing. That's mm-hmm. something if, you know, these are my brothers, and, you know better than anyone else here that how close of a, you know, yeah. when we play football, you know, we're all brothers.
It is definitely a family unit, a brotherhood, even if it's the players on the field, mm-hmm. the players' reaction or interactions with the managers or trainers or their boys, female yeah. trainers and stuff like that. We all bond together. We're all out there hours and hours and hours. We're all spending time mm-hmm. away from our families together working to have success on the field, so mm-hmm. there's no choice but to be close with these guys.
Yep, exactly, and that's what, you know, that's why I feel as if it impacted me so much and my teammates and, I mean, everyone that's a part of the program, mm-hmm. literally inside and outside, and that's something that not everybody understands. And so when I started this movement, you know, it made sense to my teammates more than it did the entire city of Indianapolis. It made sense towards, you know, the people in the community more than it did the people out in Indianapolis because, okay. you know, they realized, you know, that this is, you know, one of our own, that this is true family here that is fighting for his life, and that it made sense for me to, you know, have the passion behind the shooting of, you know, close teammates and friends. So I started We Live after, really after Dejan's 2-week fight, and he passed on 23rd, and that's when I really pushed with We Live. Miss Tracy Bush helped me, you know, sort of get that jump started, and, you know, what I wanted it to look like, because I had to reach out to many different teammates and many different classmates and, you know, ask them if they want to be a part of this, you know, coalition, this new group. And the first time we met was following the school year. It was early June, and Miss Tracy Bush was in here helping us lead, and she opened up the Warren Central doors for us, and we began planning what we wanted this to look like. And at first, you know, with the time basis, you know, we wanted to jumpstart this sort of basically the week before football kicked off, because, you know, everything would, you know, sort of take over with sports and how big it is here locally. And so, you know, from June to August, beginning of August, that's a short span of time trying to plan a peace walk. And so, you know, we had planned for it to be a local event for more like the township, where it'd be a walk somewhere over here in the township. But, you know, as we was planning for that diligently behind closed doors on my own time, I would, you know, still try to at least see if I can make this a citywide event. So I was still reaching out to local officials, legislators, and et cetera, seeing who I can get in contact with to make this a city event.
You met with the mayor, didn't you?
Yep, and I eventually met with the mayor, but actually first person I ever met with was the Department of Justice.
Okay.
So, yeah, they, DOJ was the first people to reach out to me, and they said, you know, hey, we see, they responded to me first, I would say, at least.
Okay.
And, you know, they say, hey, we see that you reached out to us, and they had me downtown meeting with them, and they were saying, you know, we're more on the federal level, but we can help connect you with the city.
Okay.
And so that's when they eventually connect me with the mayor's office and et cetera. And, you know, the mayor's office and the local city, you know, seeing that I was somebody trying to really make a change, and they took me serious, and they were like, okay, we see that you're serious. Let's try to make this a city event, no matter how much time we have.
Well, that is absolutely outstanding that you, as a young black, I want to call you entrepreneur now, really, because this is your own free business that you've created and that you are using to spread positivity and awareness for youth like yourself. And the impact speaks volumes. And I hope a lot of people that you've gone out and spoken to understand that. Now, are you going to be doing a lot of speaking engagements to high schools across the city? Is that something that you're planning on doing as well?
Yes, and especially with the new book, that's my broad goal, because honestly, you know, being from a community as the Far East Side, you know, there's a lot of things that we go through and that our young people go through that many others just don't understand. So if I'm able to, you know, allow my book to manifest in a classroom throughout the entire city, throughout this entire nation, because I realize that, you know, we're a close-knit community that goes through a lot of things here that, you know, we're not the only community that goes through these things.
Very true. Very true.
And so, you know, these are certain issues that young people from schools like here and, you know, a lot of different schools throughout the city, state, and nation, they go through.
Yeah, I mean, like, we talk about Indianapolis being, and unfortunately, gun violence here in our city is a problem, but it's like there's gun violence up north in the region in Gary. Yep. There's gun violence, of course, when you go over to Chicago. There's gun violence in Louisville. There's gun violence in Cincinnati. Unfortunately, in Detroit as well. These are areas that are high urban minority areas that, you know, they're all affected by these terrible, terrible tragedies, unfortunately. So I love to see that you're able to reach out to the members of those communities to try and help. Now, of course, you just say you're having a book. I was going to breach into that. Mm-hmm. What is the name of your book, and what are you going to be? What is the book mainly going to be about?
Yeah, the name of the book is called Be Inspired, and okay. So I would say the main mission of the book is to, you know, it's largely speaking to students, mm-hmm. but you know, I feel as if there's a second audience listening, and that's towards adults that may not understand these students. For instance, many people don't realize, one of the main topics I'll be talking about, many people don't realize that there are certain systemic issues that lead up to violence. I feel as if every time it's a, you know, a shooting that happens within our streets, large majority automatically labels them as a thug or mm-hmm. labels them as, you know, in the wrong act. But whenever it's the opposite, whenever it seems to be a different type student with a school shooting, they're like, correct. I wonder what his mental health was like, or, mm-hmm. you know, trying to dig down deep into what caused them. Well, what many people don't realize is that when, you know, even when there's inner city shootings, which, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, minority students who are not given the same equity as many others. There's other systemic issues that leads up to it.
Behind that.
There needs to be more mentors. There need to be more, you know, trauma centers. There's mental health behind those same shootings, just as any other shooting. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things that we go through as a, I would say, as a cultural people here that many times is not, our subject matters are not spoken up enough. And so those are some of the same things I'm talking about in the book, Be Inspired, some of the same things that leads up to, you know, us having to feel so close together and as a family. And, you know, as after graduating, it seems like, you know, you're in a different type of world. I mentioned many times, mm-hmm. I talk about a situation I went through at Indiana State. And I said that basically when I left this Far East Side community that, you know, I seen a different world. I seen people that, you know, may have judged me and I didn't feel comfortable. Here being a Far East Side community, no matter what the differences you have between anybody else, there is no ultimate different. We don't see color here. We don't see any type of different. We just see family, a Far East Side family. So, you know, there is a different type of reality that hit me out in the real world that, you know, there are some social issues that are still needed to be discussed. And there are some people who, you know, still have different, you know, perspectives.
When the situation happened with you at Indiana State, was that what drove you after you got situated at Ball State now? Mm-hmm. Is that what drove you to write this book? I don't want to call it. Are you going to be having like more life memories and memoirs? I almost want to call it something like that in it.
Right. You know, I definitely do feel as if that would be that's what drove me to it. You know, I wouldn't say life memories because I barely talk on any awards or rooms I've been in, but I talk on certain, you know, issues that I've been through, certain issues that, you know, my friends has been through that's changed my perspective in life. That's
okay.
Caused me to be a leader. One of the main different things that I talk about in that book is what officially led me to leave a football camp in the fall when a doctor called me and said she believed I had bone marrow cancer. It comes to find out I didn't have bone marrow cancer, but here's the kicker. What is the relation between that is, you know, I'm coming home every weekend dealing with my health and, you know, still in the football program, but want to get my health situated first. And eventually down the line, I ran into John Smith's mother. And we're talking and she and, you know, I'm talking and she's telling me all these different things John Smith was going through. And what I thought I had is exactly what John Smith was, you know, going through. Many of the different possibilities, sickle cell trait. Mm-hmm. I had to go through a nephrologist, oncologist, same doctors John had because, you know, he had a cancer that eventually, you know, developed and near his kidneys and things like that based off of sickle cell trait. And these are some of the same things I was going through that John found himself, you know, going through in more an advanced phase. And so, you know, through him and through his strength, you know, I'm oftentimes reminding myself of what he endured. And one of the main different things she told me is that he looked up to me. And I made that connection in my book because I never knew that while he was living. And especially it really hurt when he passed because I was there. Mm-hmm. I was there when he began to pass and things like that. So, you know, that's just one of many situations I talk about. plus with implicit bias situation I went through at Indiana State when a student assistant basically treated me differently based off of the way I appeared and, you know, cursed at me, you know, almost like an animal. And I used my voice and I took that to Title IX, and the school investigated it, and it, you know, weighed in my favor. But these are certain issues that I talk about that ultimately could have led up to a violence act, violent acts, because ultimately, you know, these are traumatic situations in my life that, you know, many of my peers go through, but yet some of them handle it differently. But how can we, you know, point the finger at them if we're not helping them heal their trauma?
True. Now, when are you looking for a launch date, release date for your book?
You know, really, I want this book to be released at end of May. I feel as if I'm praying to God that, you know, it can be released hopefully on the 23rd. No promises, but I announced it on the 6th. And if this can be released on the 23rd, I really do feel as if that would be nothing but God just behind this, with the 23rd being the death anniversary of Dejan.
It's hard to believe it's been 2 years now. It's crazy. I remember this tragic events that, you know, they always leave a mark about, oh man, I know where I was when that happened. And I have not had an opportunity to fully speak with his mother and his brother on the show. And I definitely want to do that. It is trying to find the right time and moment to do so. I worked extensively with his brother and making sure he is staying on the right path and really staying on the right path here in the school. And trust me, that's a battle within itself if you've known Jalen. But I do love the love that people tell me that they have for Dejan is the same love I feel for his brother now after working with him all year. And so I understand where everybody's come from with that. It's like you just really hate to see people go through instances like this where their lives are just taken.
Exactly.
And they're just gone.
Exactly. And I mean, even from a, you know, just another brotherhood perspective, it really hurt, I feel as if, on my class, because that's someone we looked up to.
Mm-hmm.
Not looked at to at the same eye level from the same class, but someone we looked up to. And it's one thing being, you know, having a brother out there on the field, but it's another thing having, you know, a big brother, because that translates outside the field. And, you know, it really felt as if we all, you know, had a whole just, you know, taken from us.
Now, with your book, and this is something that just come to my mind, will you be having a digital version of it as well?
Yep. So I'll be having hard copy, digital. It's not too long. I want to keep it short enough and to the point for my young people to read.
Okay.
And, you know, I really just want this to be in different schools and different classrooms, because these are subjects that's not spoken up on enough.
Correct.
And I want to give my peers something else to look up to outside of, you know, I feel as if I really want to break that stigma that you have to, in order to make it out and make something of yourself, that you have to be, you know, a star athlete, or that you have to be, you know, a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Many of my peers, I want them to see that, you know, there's other life to,
Very much so. You know,
athletics and rap careers and music careers, et cetera.
Yeah, and those things are great. We're not dogging those. It's just you hear, and it's funny. Rapper 2 Chainz has latest album. Rapper go to the league. Okay, great. But there's other things. You can be a teacher. You can be a lawyer. That's a doctor, medical field. You can be an engineer. There's so many different things. And really, I would love to see more teachers. I think I counted. We have like, of all the teachers in the building, I think there's over 200 teachers in this building. It's like less than 20 or so African-American teachers in our building. And we need more. And I was like, man, I wonder how many African-American students in college are actually trying to be teachers. Mm-hmm. Is somebody not steering them towards that? And if that's the case, how can we get that to change? Because as a school as big as ours, we're almost 3,800 to 4,000 students every year. Most of that, a good number of those students are African-American minority students that, you know, oftentimes they need a similar face like theirs to help guide them.
Yep. And those are some of the things I talk about in this book, because I realized that, you know, things start in the home, but what many people don't realize is this is where students spend majority of their time. Correct. In the schools. So their largest impact is going to be from within the schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's many people in this school that, you know, students attach on to and that mm-hmm. teachers attach on to. But ultimately, they need somebody that, you know, they can feel understands them and somebody that is open enough to reaching out towards them and saying, hey, I've noticed that you're acting out in class. What's really going on?
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, automatically suspending.
Yelling at them. Exactly. Like sometimes you yell at a kid and they don't respond, or if they do respond, it's going to be in a negative way and it's more problems occur. So you definitely got to have a working relationship. And a lot of times people have working relationships with people that they feel understands them.
Exactly.
Now, okay, so we're talking about We Live, and you've been doing some great things. You took a trip to Costa Rica, was it October?
October.
And then you were October was busy for you. October, September, you were the Grand Marshal of the Circle City Classic. What was that experience like?
That was great. And, you know, it's crazy because that's when I was still going through my cancer scare where I was misled to believe that I had cancer. And
did they give you an answer to what you were feeling, or are you still doing testing?
So actually, I was doing different tests, and there was this huge test that would have ruled everything out, that had to be sent to California. And basically, as being an African-American male, I had different, my numbers were steadily rising. My doctor first believed that I had bone marrow cancer based off of some lab results I had. Mm-hmm. And certain workout supplements was causing that. And I felt a little under pressure heading to camp. And so those workout supplements became more of a something that I put in my life too often.
Okay.
And they were alarming my numbers. And they're it's not saying that they're necessarily bad, but you know, for my body,
it wasn't right for you.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And so I had to tweak my diet a little bit. And overall, you know, also with being an African-American male, my numbers look slightly different than, you know, certain normal ones. And so, you know, I've been able to constantly work with my doctors and be sure that my numbers stay at a level that they're supposed to.
Okay. So you're fully healthy right now?
Correct.
Okay, good. Yep. Good. Now you can get back to me about the Circle City Classic.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. You know, really feeling the... you know, for me, it was really special because I go to a PWI. Okay. And so I'm at the Circle City Classic with different HBCU schools, and just it sort of felt like an HBCU environment. And I mean, being in the center of all that in the parade, I mean, it really felt amazing. I heard the bands, and
yes,
I was able to have all access in the Lucas for the game. And I mean, just the entire experience, it sort of made me basically want to go to HBCU. Exactly.
I understand that.
Overall, just being in the center of that attention just made me wish the weekend was longer.
Almost. Yeah. I had Dwayne Trotter Brown. He went to Florida A&M, and
he was in that game.
Yeah, he was in that game. Yeah. And he was telling me how many of his family were there and everything. And I asked him about the experience of HBCU, and he says it's, because he started at Eastern Michigan, and he ended up, after his cancer scare he dealt with, ended up there, and how much he says that the environment that he loved and how he wishes more kids from our building would have the experience to go down there and have that same experience that he had. And thinking back to all the years I would go to Circle City Classic growing up, like Grambling, seeing Southern, and seeing all those other schools come in there with the bands, and oh my God, man, right. This the fun. And I can only imagine what that's like when it's not the season, when football's not around. Like the campus environment, it's a beautiful thing. It has to be. It absolutely has to be. So, okay, Circle City Classic was great for you, which I'm so glad to see that. I know you're going to do bigger and better things coming up, especially when this book drops. Let's also talk about your time here at Warren. What was it like for you as a player here and in the program? What was it like for you?
Yeah, overall, dealt with many different injuries and adversity. And I, you know, looking back on it now, I'm like, man, I probably have more injuries and surgeries than, you know, top five on the list. And But looking back on now, I feel as if God put me through those adversities to prepare me for today.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the same adversities that I had to overcome then to make me stronger for today, you know, outside of physical health, you know, being physically injured, but also adversities I would deal with mentally leading up to where I am today. And, you know, overall, you know, I cherish this bond and this brotherhood that I've built here, that I've helped build here in the course of 4 years, more than anything. I felt as if, especially after losing DeJean, we really got closer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing I would trade in the world than every Friday night, you know, being able to play with my brothers. And it goes beyond Friday nights. It goes to the summer workouts mm-hmm. and everything that, you know, we've did in the course of 4 years, that every football player goes through in the course of 4 years, of building a certain unique brotherhood and bond. And there's nothing in the world I would trade for that.
Did you ever get down on yourself when you weren't able to perform like you wanted to on game nights and stuff like that?
So much. And injuries, you know, constantly I would think, you know, oh, if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be injured. Or, oh, why am I always the one to get injured? And, you know, I had to, you know, switch positions and do what I could best to benefit the team, you know, while still being behind the eight ball, because I've missed certain amount of time due to injury than any other students, and which made me a step slower, less quicker. But you know, I was able to, you know, make my niche at outside linebacker. But ultimately, I can say, you know, it's funny you say that, because there was you know, it's a lot of pressure,
mm-hmm. and,
you know, here at such a great program. But
absolutely,
there was always one player who could raise my confidence, and that's DeJean. DeJean was always a player that no matter if you mess up on the field, no matter if everyone is mad at you because now y'all end up doing up downs because of your mistakes, he was the one to not get mad. He was the one to lift your head up and say, it's cool, next play. It's not that big of a deal. He was the one. I remember just the week before he passed in a 7-on-7 tournament, I let somebody score. They had caught on me or something like that. And DeJean was the one to, you know, at the end of the day, pick my head up. It's cool. He said, just switch me spots. I got him. I mean, he's just that type of player to pick you up. And when everyone else is probably, you know, upset, which I would be too, because y'all doing up downs and things like that, he was the one, shoot, it's just five.
That's really great to hear. And one thing I'm really glad the team did, because we won state this past season. Every year, the teams that win state, they, for a full year, Lucas Oil Stadium has a display of all the teams that won, and you get a jersey that you get down there. And this year, the DeJean's number 3 jersey is down there, which I thought was very fitting and very special that they did that. It's just the numbers and everything around this season and how they were able to get around it, and the trials and tribulations, that the ups and downs of this team, the seniors especially, that they went through, and it's had success that they have. Like, it really is something special when you look back on it, man.
It is. And, you know, honestly, that just shows how big of an impact not only DeJean had, but how big of an impact he's had on, you know, in particularly the program.
Yes.
And, you know, honestly, he was the one, he was always the most athletic on the field. And his impact goes larger than, you know, on Friday nights. It goes towards his impact on the Little League.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes towards his impact on different coaches. You know, his impact was, you know, larger than, you know, his teammates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, last thing before we I cut you loose here. What do you see yourself, or what are you studying in college, if you don't mind me asking?
Finance. Yep. So I'm a finance major.
Okay. I was thinking you were like a philosophy or a psychology major or something like that with all the work you're doing. Okay. So where do you see things going from you within the next year or so with We Live and everything that you guys got going on?
Yeah. So overall, I decided with finance because, one, it was real close to what I was choosing at Indiana State, which was business is pretty broad in general while playing football, and finance is, you know, the kind of the next step up, and it's kind of it will allow me to lead into politics.
Okay.
Sort of. And if I pick up a poli sci
okay.
Minor as well, and in the next course of the year where I plan with We Live and now be inspired is to really, for myself personally, to get down in the grassroots issues of what's really causing violence. So I talk about these same systemic issues in my book. Now what that allows me to do is that allows me to travel and speak into schools. That allows me to, you know, have different mentorship programs. I'm saying, okay, I talk about these in our book. Now here's what we need to do as a city, as a community. Here's what you can, you know, put into our young people's lives. Ultimately, like one of the main things I'm also starting is, you know, advertising my words on YouTube and et cetera. I feel like there's so many different YouTube channels for a young generation of my people, my, you know, peers just almost doing nothing. Well, now I can give you guys on a YouTube channel some positive inspiration. Daily text, all those things. I just really want to inspire young people.
It's so much easier now to reach a broad audience of viewership, listeners. Even when I started this, the podcast, I knew podcasts was big, but starting it, I did not know how big it truly was. And just creating a YouTube channel and putting some of the shows that I have on YouTube, I see different content creators that are out there, and I'm like, man, this really is big. There's so many people out there doing, like, okay, you got makeup people. You got people that are doing, like, showing how to, you know, properly get your ways right. You got people reviewing music videos or albums and movies and stuff like that. Like, these are people, you know, they create a fan base and viewership. And there are a lot of people that are doing motivational stuff, inspirational stuff. But I think what you would be, I think you would be perfect for your own YouTube channel to actually reach out more people and reach out people across the country and across the world. Exactly. I think that would be perfect, man. So best luck to you with that and everything. Like, I really love to see what you're doing. I love that you are one of our own. I love these. Of course, people always talk about, you always have defensive guys. I can't help it. I said this once again. Warren Central's defense is the all-time greatest defense in state history. Fight me. All right. So I love that you are one of our own and that you continue to do great things. When you have your book, I will definitely let people know. Do you have a price point for it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
So I really want to make it, you know, where I can at least whatever that price point is, where it be discounted for students, where it be discounted for, you know, people from my own community. I need to find out, you know, more with who I'm going through. How do I make all those things? How do I come about all those things? So now I'm getting in the process of that. This and next week.
Well, whenever you do, let me know, because I want to buy two. I want to get one signed. Definitely get one signed for myself and then give one away to somebody I feel that could definitely help. So definitely, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. We got to give a flick up here. Ladies and gentlemen, for the very first time, We Live Indy's very own Brandon Warren. Brandon, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
This is David Bell, Indiana Gatorade Player of the Year, True Warrior Football Warrior Legend Award winner, the only player to win state in football and basketball here at Warren Central, and you are listening to the True Warrior Football Podcast.
I want to thank everybody who, first of all, has sat down with me over the time to talk to me about various football things. And of course, anybody that's talked to me about Dijon that's been on this episode again, now Aaron again, thank you as well for sharing your moments and memories that you have of him and how he's inspired you to keep going. That's just outstanding. And I really love that you guys have done that for me, for the show, for others can listen to and, you know, remember Dijon and what he meant and how great of an individual he was. And another person that was really, you know, really had a great memory or great bond with Dijon was his coach from SIU, Coach Nate Griffin. And I reached out to Coach Griffin, and he was so kind enough to help me. He sent me this message. I want to end the episode on this message that he sent, because he never got to have Dijon as a player, but from just recruiting him and being around him, he made such an impact on his life. This is what he sent to me.
He said, there are so many things that come to mind when thinking about Dijon, specifically the feeling of happiness and energy. After I would talk with him, it always left me feeling upbeat and energized. He was full of life and confidence, and I liked that about him. He had a fighter spirit, and there wasn't much he couldn't overcome. I still have a picture and will always have a picture of him in my office. I watch his film a few times a year just to remind me of how lucky we were to have a chance, to have had a chance to have him be a Saluki. I have no doubts he would have been great. To this day, he still energizes me and reminds me that no matter what the odds or the situation, to keep fighting for what you want. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly who Dijon was. He was a fighter. He was a fighter all the way to the end. And at the end, God said his fight was over and it was time for him to come on home. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's listen to another great episode of True Warrior Football Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Kidd Smith. And with that, I leave you with this.